Right now it's Wednesday, time for a political junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
Last night's slumber party in the Senate turned out to be a snore, and today Republicans blocked the final vote on an amendment that called for troops to withdraw from Iraq by next spring. On the campaign trail, John McCain is short on cash and staff, and a new GOP poll shows the top choice for president is none of the above. Democrats Hillary Clinton and John Edwards get busted trying to limit the candidates in their debates, and Obama girl takes on Giuliani girl all over YouTube. If you have questions or comments about the Iraq vote, presidential campaigns, or any of the rest of the political news, give us a call. The number is 800-989-8255 or email talk@npr.org. And to help us get through all that, Ken Rudin is here. He's NPR's political editor and writes the weekly Political Junkie column at npr.org. You can also hear him here every Wednesday as our Political Junkie. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Rebecca.
So let's start with the Senate last night. The Democrats called for this all-night session, pretty much knowing they were not going to get the 60 votes they need.
No, Majority Leader Harry Reid wanted to make a point. He wanted to point out the fact that the Republicans are holding up this bill. But the Republicans say this is just pure politics and it didn't accomplish anything. And in some ways, they're both right. I think the Democrats did point out that the Republicans don't want this bill to pass or to even be brought up for a vote. This wasn't an actual vote on the amendment itself. It was a vote to stop the debate. And that got 52 votes out of the 60 needed to stop the debate. But the Republicans are also making the point, probably rightly, that or did any votes change? Did anybody change their mind for this all-night affair? No. Did Iraq policy change at all? No. Did it make the war any closer to ending? No. But at the same time, it is the most important issue in the minds of voters, and that's why both sides are still, you know, wrangling on this.
So both sides made some points. Both sides got some press time. But what happens for the debate on Iraq?
Well, Reid says he'll bring it back up when there's some kind of a compromise. And there are the Republicans who say, look, you know, Harry Reid is doing a little theatrics here, a little showmanship. There are some measures out there. Perhaps John Warner, the Republican from Virginia, is trying to work out a compromise that some Democrats may not feel is strong enough and the troops would not be brought out quickly enough. But at least he's trying to come up with some kind of a compromise that would get a majority of the vote. And right now, the two sides are far apart.
And then there's this question of, is a majority 51 or is it 60? I mean, the Democrats had to get 60 last night to shut off debate. And one of the things they were criticizing the Republicans for was forcing them to get to 60.
Well, the Republicans did the exact same thing years ago when the Republicans were in the majority. I mean, I'm not going to equate the importance of the war in Iraq with some of the other issues I'm going to bring up right now. But when the Republicans had a majority, there was a majority of support for Josh Bolton to be the UN ambassador. Mm-hmm. There was a majority support for some of the President Bush's Supreme Court justices. Democrats insisted on a 60-vote threshold. Republicans are doing the same thing right now.
Let's move on. On the campaign front, Hillary Clinton and John Edwards got into trouble for a private strategy session. What happened there?
This was after an NAACP conference where all the Democratic candidates approached. And apparently, according to the stories here, John Edwards approached Hillary Clinton, said, look, we've got to limit the number of assume the candidates are here. It's getting unwieldy. And Hillary Clinton responded and said, yes, our camp should talk about this. Now, both backed down. Well, actually, John Edwards said, no, I didn't want to eliminate the Kucinichs or the Gravels of the world. I think it's unruly having eight candidates on stage and nobody gets their point across. And Hillary Clinton basically said, well, it was all John Edwards' idea. It was his decision. For Hillary Clinton, I would think, given the fact that she still remains front runner, we could talk about what these polls mean, you know, all these months in advance. But the fact that Hillary Clinton does seem to have a healthy lead over the rest of the field, she probably wants as many candidates as possible to just, you know, have a big field. Whereas John Edwards and other candidates like John Edwards, Joe Biden, Chris Dodd, Barack Obama, Bill Richardson, they would love to shorten the field, at least get rid of the Kucinichs and the Gravels, who are not showing so well in the polls, and so they can go after the sensible front runners like Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama.
Well, you know, if they want more people on stage, if Hillary Clinton wants more people on stage, she should switch parties. Those Republican debates are a cast of thousands.
Well, no, actually, I mean, you have eight Democrats, you have nine Republicans because Jim Gilmore dropped out. It was a big shock to many people, Jim Gilmore dropping out. But also you'll have Fred Thompson coming in any month now. I say any month because we thought he was going to jump in the race July 4th, then maybe middle of August. Now they're talking about September. And it's fascinating to me about Fred Thompson, given the fact that he spent hardly anything. You know, John McCain has gone through $23, $24 million the last couple of months alone, a tremendous amount of money spent. Fred Thompson has spent nothing, literally. He's given a couple of speeches, none of which I thought were impressive. And yet, if you look at the polls, he's up there. The last AP poll has him tied just around where Giuliani is in the lead. Maybe 2 points behind Giuliani, and it's remarkable given the fact that he has yet to announce, he has yet to be specific about anything other than he's tired of the way things are done in Washington. But apparently, that's enough for these Republican voters.
And what about John McCain? He says he won't get out of the race short of a fatal illness is the actual quote. But he's lost staff, he's lost cash.
There's a tremendous sadness about watching the John McCain campaign, given the fact that, I mean, if you talk about Iraq, a lot of people say that the reason he's doing so poorly is Iraq. Well, he's talked about the problems with Bush's Iraq policy for years now. 3.5 years ago, he called for Donald Rumsfeld's resignation, well before Bush decided to make that move. But given the fact that that he's associated with a failed Iraq policy, given the fact that he supports an immigration policy that an overwhelming majority of the Republican Party is opposed to, it's no wonder why people are not giving to the McCain campaign. But, you know, He still likes to crack jokes. He still has a lot of the people in the media who support him. But there is a sadness to him because he really does say what's on his mind. I mean, you could talk about Mitt Romney, who was espousing pro-choice things several years ago and is no longer doing that. You could talk about Rudy Giuliani, who's been kind of all over the map with conservative issues, liberal issues. His record as a New York mayor is contrasting with his proposals as a presidential candidate. McCain is still nominally the straight shooter he was in 2000, except the fact is that the war and immigration has really taken his candidacy down.
McCain, of course, not the first candidate to find himself in trouble early in a campaign. A California Republican by the name of Ronald Reagan had similar problems in his campaign for president. Craig Shirley is a GOP consultant and a Reagan biographer. He's on the line with us from his office in Virginia. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rebecca. How are you?
So you've been through this before with a candidate like Ronald Reagan. Do you think it's time for McCain to call it a day?
No. He's still got as many months before the first primary. And that's an eternity in politics. Sometimes a day can be an eternity in politics. You know, in 1976, Reagan lost the first five primaries to Gerald Ford. In fact, his campaign was $2 million in debt. His charter plane was taken away, and he was actually flying by commercial plane. Can you imagine Ronald Reagan, standing in line like the rest of us with his boarding pass and his ticket, to try to wrest the presidency from Gerald Ford? But he campaigned tirelessly in North Carolina, won, stunning upset, and came back and stormed into Kansas City and almost pulled off one of the greatest upsets in American politics. Ironically, he did everything he could to prevent the same thing from happening in 1980, and exactly the same thing happened, where he lost Iowa in a stunning upset by George Bush. And then again, his campaign was in debt. He went down by 21 points in North Carolina, and once again had to reach deep down inside himself and reconnect with the voters, and once again pulled off a stunning win, which then propelled him to the nomination. So there's a lot of time for John McCain as there was for Ronald Reagan.
So what sort of advice would you give him?
Get back to basics. Remember that the first three letters of the word consultant. Many years ago, I used to work for the New York Racing Association. We had a saying around the track that a good jockey cannot make a bad horse win, but a bad jockey can make a good horse lose. Most of these campaigns that crash and burn are as much the fault of the consultants as they are anything. John McCain's strong suit is his integrity and his honesty. And that's what he needs to campaign on. He needs to make corruption of Washington, the corruption of the unholy marriage between the Republican Party and the K Street Walkers, corporate America, and pound on that every day. That is his strong suit, and that's what people know him to believe, and know that he's a tough son of a gun, and he needs to play to that strength. He needs to get away from the immigration bill and the other things that he's done that have offended the GOP base, and start reconnecting with them on the things that they agree with him on.
Craig, it's Ken Rudin here. There's a recent AP poll that shows that 23% of the responders still do not have a first choice. And that's pretty unusual for the Republican Party, given the history of the Republican Party, when people like Nixon, Reagan, both Bushes, Bob Dole, they were the front runners and they stuck with the front runner. Why is the Republican electorate having trouble picking a candidate at this point?
Ken, you know, I think the blunt truth is that the Republican Party is falling apart, at least at the national level. The grassroots knows what it stands for, and it's always known what it stood for. The problem is that there's nobody at the national level who's really responding to what they want, which is they came to the Republican Party, you know, through Barry Goldwater, through Bill Buckley, through Ronald Reagan, for reasons of anti-communism, limited government, maximum freedom, personal freedom, personal privacy. The National Republican Party has not addressed these concerns or many of these concerns for Republicans for many, many years. And so it's not surprising that they're choosing, you know, none of the above or just parking their votes and their support and their money on the sideline until somebody emerges. You know, it's funny, we always talk about a Republican candidate, you know, especially Richard Nixon, you know, ran as the law and order candidate. Well, you know, in Fred Thompson, Republicans very well might get a law and order candidate.
Greg Shirley is a Republican consultant. He worked on the presidential campaign of Ronald Reagan. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Ken Rudin, how much credence should we be giving to any poll at this point in the campaign?
Well, I love that question because that's a very important question. 4 years ago at this point, the Democratic frontrunner, I love that word frontrunner, considering the fact that nobody's voted yet, 4 years ago, it was Joe Lieberman. Mm-hmm. 10 days before the Iowa caucuses in 2004, the leader was Howard Dean, second place was Richard Gephardt, and they finished third and fourth, respectfully. So it's kind of interesting, the fact that we're talking about frontrunners at this point, but the Republican Party is historically known for having leaders, you know, and it's the Democrats who have the problem. It was the Jimmy Who when Jimmy Carter came out of nowhere in 76. Nobody who knew who George McGovern. Bill Clinton didn't get in the race in the 92 campaign until October of 91. So, you know, it's unusual to see the Republicans in this point. But given the fact that the war is so unpopular, given the fact that the President Bush and a lot of the establishment Republicans support an immigration bill that the rank and file do not support, it's no wonder that a lot of Republicans are sitting home, both with their checkbooks and their support.
You mentioned Joe Lieberman, which is my segue to this email from Keith in Santa Cruz, who says, have any of the Democratic or Republican candidates publicly or privately stated they'd be interested in the position of vice president if offered? And have any of the same candidates, other than Bill Richardson, stated they would not accept the position of vice president?
Well, actually, Chris Dodd announced today that he'd rather stay in the Senate than be vice president, which makes complete sense because you assume if there's going to be a presidential, the Democratic frontrunner is either going to be Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, a lot of people feel, and they may not take a fellow senator from the Northeast as their running mate. But, you know, John Edwards, I think the reason so many people feel John Edwards is such a strong candidate is because he accepted the vice presidential nomination in 2004, gave the American people a chance to see what he's like, and then they had the opportunity to cast him as a presidential candidate in 2008. It's hard to make the case that any Democrat, given the fact that this 2008 looks like a big Democratic year, for any Democrat to say no to the vice presidency.
We were talking earlier this hour about YouTube and the influence of these videos. Have you seen the Obama girl or Giuliani girl videos?
I have seen it, yes.
Let's listen to it. This is a little bit of the Obama girl, followed by an online video face-off between Obama girl and Giuliani girl. Because I got a crush on Obama. Now wait, 2008. Baby, you're the best candidate. Other than being fun to play on the radio, do you think what do you think of the rise of the YouTube election? I mean, do you consider it hype or is it actually having an influence, do you think?
Obviously, if you get somebody like George Allen talking about Makaka off script, you know, non-scripted and caught on YouTube, that's a major event. But But apparently these women have nothing to do with the Obama campaign, the Giuliani campaign. Matter of fact, one of the Giuliani girls says that she wants to be wife number four. Now, I don't think a Giuliani campaign would, condone such sort of kind of language. It's fun. Perhaps it makes people more interested in these political figures like the Jon Stewart show would. But ultimately, I don't think it brings more voters to the fold. I know that David Vitter is very interested in these videos. But other than that, I'm not sure.
Yeah, David Vitter, who... Well, let's play a tape from David Vitter this week.
I want to again offer my deep, sincere apologies to all those I have let down and disappointed with these actions from my past. I am completely responsible, and I'm so very, very sorry.
What he's sorry for is that his phone number turned up in the records of an escort service. He's a Republican senator from Louisiana. Where does he go from here? What happens?
Well, you know, last night in the Senate, on the floor of the Senate, when they started putting all these cots on the floor, I thought maybe David Vitter would feel comfortable. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. But the problem with David Vitter, you should see Rebecca's face right now, by the way. But the problem with David Vitter is that he was elected to the Senate as a pro-family conservative. It's one thing, it's the hypocrisy thing that a lot of people find objectionable about Vitter. There are a lot of people,
This is the sponsor of the anti-gay marriage amendment.
Exactly. He's criticized his opponents and Edwin Edwards and other political figures in Louisiana for not having the true Louisiana values about faith and marriage and things like that. So not only has his name appeared on the D.C. Madam's list, but his name has also been linked to some prostitution rings in Louisiana, which he denies. But again, it's still out there.
Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor and our political junkie every Wednesday afternoon. You can read his column and hear his podcasts at npr.org. Thanks, Ken.
Thanks, Rebecca.
This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington.